Blog Talk Radio.
An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He tells his grandson, "A fight is going on inside me. This is a terrible fight. You see, this fight is between two wolves. One wolf is evil. It is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, full of arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority. It lies with false pride, superiority, and ego. The other wolf, though," he continues, "the other wolf is good. This wolf is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, full of humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. Now this same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person too." The grandson, he sat there and thought about it for a minute, looked up and asked his grandfather, "Well, which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "It's the wolf you feed."
Lord, it's so hard living this life, a constant struggle each and every day. Some wonder why I'd rather die than to continue living this way. Many are blind and cannot find the truth, cause no one seems to really know. But I won't accept that this is how it's gonna be. Therefore, you got to let me and my people go. Cause I wanna be free, completely free. Lord, won't you please come and save me? I wanna be free, totally free. I'm not gonna let this world worry me.
Wake up, goddammit!
All right. Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you are listening. Bienvenidos, K-Tal. Oki, namaste, and welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties. Live Mondays and Wednesday nights, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, live on blogtalkradio.com/TheGreenhouseEffect. That's the letter FX. Holding down the one other half of our host and duty, some call him the Lions Historian, others call him Unc. I just simply call him my best friend because he's my dad, Bill Green. What's happening, Daddy-O? Good evening, man. Feel like it's been like months, weeks. Where you been? Who you with?
It does seem like it's been longer than a week. Yeah, it's kind of deep. I was thinking about that when I was trying to dial into the studio. It's like, I don't remember how to do this. It's only been a week, dude.
It's only been a week.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, it's been a rather involved week, you know, no question about it, you know, the past 7 days. I went to Kansas City, Missouri, after Missouri. You heard that.
Missouri. Say it right.
Yeah. Over the weekend for a memorial service for, I'm always kind of edgy about putting X before people's names. It seems to me the a degree of relationships, you know, like my ex-wife, you know, who is Armand and Brandon, your two brothers' mother, you know, her mother, they had the memorial service for. And, you know, for me, it was a plethora of mixed emotions, some degree of remorse or regret, maybe is a better word, from not having had that last conversation, you know. And I think many of us can relate to that, you know, feeling of having somebody pass, having somebody die, and the I wish kicks in, you know, I wish I had had that last conversation. And I was asked over the weekend, when was the last time I remember talking to her? And, you know, I couldn't remember the last time. It was all kind of smashed together. I think the last time was when you and I visited her at the hospital one Thanksgiving, you know, when she was supposed to show up for that Thanksgiving dinner. And that same day, you know, we got notice that she was in the hospital. That's the last time I remember actually having a, you know, something more than a drive-by, hi, how you doing thing, you know, where we actually sat and spent time with her. And, you know, so being with, again, that word, ex-family, what does that mean? Like, Armand's not my ex-son. Brandon's not my ex-son, you know. So, you know, I call Tammy, you know, my ex-wife, but that doesn't negate, you know, what was born from, you know, the union, the marriage. So, you know, that was the kind of thing, you know, I was like vacillating. I was just flipping through inside of myself back and forth as I was sitting in the memorial service in this, you know, up-to-date church. It's a nice, kind of had a Catholic flair to it. Mm-hmm. And with Carol Ann, that's Tammy's mother, Carol Ann Gomez Walker. Interesting that, you know, she had Gomez Walker in her name, but not Roberson, who was the first Tammy's father. You know, Brandon, your brother, you know, I guess somewhat, again, another one of those, you know, another one of those attachments. Brandon, I guess, would legally be considered my stepson. And I don't even know how to think of him as a, I don't know what that means. You don't know how I'm supposed to feel. But Brandon, his last name is Roberson, you know, not Green. Tammy kept Green. So, you know, she's Tammy Green, A. Brandon Roberson, and her mother was Carol Ann Gomez Walker. So I'm sitting in the church, sitting in the I got a little zinge, you know, that I wasn't asked to speak. And then, you know, when I got home, when I got to where, you know, we're staying was an Airbnb, which again, me and the family, you know, just us, we're at this Airbnb, huge place that could accommodate 20 people, but it was like, you know, four families, you know, actually one family, because it was Armand and his wife, Brandon, Kelly, and their children, my grandchildren, you know, three of them, you know, Tammy, myself, and a friend of Tammy. So we had this huge place all to ourselves and people coming in and out, you know how we do. And food, you know, food up the wazoo. So I was, you know, really kind of going through my own thoughts about, well, just who am I in this in this setup, in this family dynamic, you know, like I'm an ex, but I'm a father, you know, and at the same time, a person who had a relationship with Tim's mother for, you know, 40 plus years, closer to her mother's age than Tammy's age. But in the end, you know, when I got through going through my feelings, you know, I heard the Lord speak to me in the darkness, you know, to, in essence said, you know, man, can we wrap this up? You know, are you done? Just, you know, and I was kind of, the whole point of being kind of singed was that I wanted to say goodbye, you know, and so the Lord said, man, just say goodbye. She'll hear you, you know, and so driving home mostly. And then I was reminded, you know, so I said goodbye out loud, you know, goodbye, Carol Ann. And, you know, it was like, well, see, that wasn't no big deal. But I guess things happen in the way they do that often cause people to take on an unnecessary amount of duress when competing with, you know, life's twists and turns. And sometimes it's hard not to compete with life's twists and turns, especially when one like myself can take it all so personal, you know, and the sorting the seeds and the separating the wheat from the chaff sometimes requires a tremendous degree of letting go. And sometimes letting go kind of defies the laws of gravity. It just... Like it's like flypaper, you know. I'm real good at letting go of some things, you know, but there are other things that just cling to me like flypaper. I just call myself shaking my hands, I let go, and there it is, still there. So that was kind of, that wasn't kind of, that's what the week, like, last show up to now. And then after dealing with all that, then suddenly, you know, it's all this, these shootings just springing out, you know, not out of everywhere. I'm talking about the variations, you know, of shootings, not the singular one that the media is kind of focused on right now. So I know you didn't ask for all that, but, you know, that's where I've been for the past week, man. And how about you? How have you been? You know, you've kind of been through the ringer yourself, huh?
Yeah, before I get in me to talking about me, let me, if you don't mind, you know, listening to you and just now and thinking about our conversations, you know, and dealing with, I guess, dealing with death and life, you know, we reflect and looking at our relationships and individually and the relationships with the person that passed away. You know, I can kind of dig why you, you know, felt how you felt, because you guys had a very different kind of relationship, you know, I mean, and even thinking about the relationship that you have with my mom, you know, your other ex-wife, like, I'm not your ex-son, you know, like you said, you know?
Yeah, you're my ex-son.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, you and my mom have a hell of a relationship together. Yeah. You know, usually when we hear X, it's like, oh, well, you know, it's, yeah, you know, we always think about these War of the Roses type stuff, you know?
And,
you know, whatever the relationship was with you and Tammy is one thing, but the relationship that you and Carol had was something different, you know, and I can dig why you wanted to share that. You know, we go through life a lot of times and we do things in the shadows, you know, and it's not that we want to be, you know, it's not like we want to be like, hey, look at what I did, you know, but in our own way, you know, it's just like, in a way, it's almost like, yeah, look what I did. But this is like a part of my closure, you know, not to really, you know, like, I don't want y'all to applaud me. But I want, you know, if there was any applause needed, it's the relationship, it's the influence, it's the whatever it is that Carol brought to the relationship as well. I hope that makes sense, you know, but I just wanted to, you know, acknowledge and just kind of, you know, feel you, you know, that I'm here with you, you know, and I'm just glad that you shared those feelings and all those things that you were going through over the weekend.
And of course it made sense. Yeah. I just had muted you for a second because I was gnawing on a piece of grub and I realized I was smacking. I'm feeling everything you're saying, man. Mm-hmm.
And Ray in the chat, and I'm assuming that's Ray and not Maria. Ray counted, you know, all to joy. You know, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that's what even adds on to the ebb and flow, if you will, of the energies that you were dealing with. Because it was, I think it was more joy, you know, than you know, pain and suffering. So at least from my point of view, it seemed that way.
And that's always the case. I mean, well, I can't say that, you know, that's too broad of a statement to make for everybody. But in my life, it's always the case where there's commitment in relationship, regardless of what type of relationship, where there's commitment, there's always more joy, you know, than sorrow. Even in relationships that break up, you know, I will spend more time reflecting on the final blow of a breakup, but relationships that have endured always have more moments in my life. I've always had more moments of joy. You know, it's just that for me, the breakup tends to be the thing that gets all the attention. It's like the jumping off point, the area where I need to roll up my sleeves and get to working on myself and blah, 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 instead of realizing and accepting that, well, there must have been something endearing at the start of the relationship, never would have had a beginning in the first place. You know, so it's just the twists and turns of life, you know, that I've learned over 75 years, you know, to expect nothing and therefore be able to deal with everything, you know, but expectations all too often, if not always, you know, put a ceiling on endeavors. You know, expectations don't give much room for flexible growth, at least in my life, you know. So that's what, you know, the constant reminder is, you know, that in the personal life, I don't know how to extend it into the non-personal, you know, the things that I see, the things I read, or the things I hear about. But in my personal life, you know, there's always the opportunity to learn and grow. And, you know, learning comes before growing in my world anyway.
Amen. Amen. I used to always, when I was, I don't know if you remember, but those days when we were hooking up at Carol's house, when you were staying over there and you would you know, take my ride and drop me off.
I was staying there, but just so everybody understand, I wasn't living with her. I was renting the house. She lived in Kansas City. I just want to be sure that everybody understands that, you know, that was a house that she asked me to stay in, you know, because it had been broken into several times. So I rented the house. All right, go ahead.
At her house that you were renting. Thank you. Yes. And you would drop me off at DuSable when I was working over there for Betty Shabazz. I used to have this saying, I don't know if you remember, you know, expect nothing but prepare for anything. That was kind of my flow when I was dealing with security on the south side over there.
But yeah, right on. Yeah.
Anyway. So
here we are, right?
Yeah.
So what's going on with you, man? Yeah.
You know, but before I do that, let me just real quick.
Still resisting. All right.
I'm going to be real quick here. You know, our due diligence at the beginning of every show. Just a quick reminder.
Yeah, forgot all about that. Yeah.
It's all good. It's all good. I'm gonna be real quick on this one. You know,
good
for the millions and millions of listeners. I'm sure you already know. I know you guys got already your pen and pad, but I'll make sure that you got it anyway. So this is just a quick reminder. Grab a pen and pad, a pencil and paper, post-it note marker, back of an envelope, or a napkin if you got it. Want to make sure you don't forget anything. Got any questions? Any comments? Something you might pick up from our conversation, make sure you write it down. Mondays and Wednesdays, we are live. You can engage with us through many different ways. You can call in directly at 516 I almost forgot the number. 516-453-6094. Again, 516-453-6094. You can also chat with us in the chat room. That's on the Blog Talk Radio site. Again, blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhousefx, the letter FX. Or you can also engage with us on Facebook through the event page as well. So, yeah, I'm just going to be quick with that. So, yeah, I had quite an interesting weekend, man. I messed around and got a new car. My old ride went out on me, man. The piston shot, and so I, you know, instead of paying for a new engine, I just went ahead and grinded my teeth and counted all my pennies went ahead and got myself a new ride. But it was quite a up and down, you know, thinking about the what ifs and things like that before. Mm-hmm. Going to look at getting a new car. I feel like I was going to the doctor, you know what I mean? Because it's like, we gotta look at your finances, and we gotta look at your credit, and we gotta check this and check that, you know. But
that was more like going to the dentist.
It really was. I was being nice saying the doctor, but it really was like the dentist. I didn't want people to think I was tripping. But it's exactly what it felt like, man. But, the shorter the story is, I was able to. So 3 years ago, the vehicle that went out on me, at that time, I had a credit score of like a 5-something. But here we are 3 years later, and my credit is like a 7. It's over 7, you know, and I was able to get this vehicle, you know, maybe about an extra $100 a month in payments, but this is all in my name. No co-signers needed, no nothing. So it's just this sense of accomplishment that I felt
right on
this weekend, you know. I've been kicking it, man. You know, of course, I went out immediately and started hustling and working, but, you know, of course, mindful, though, being in Chicago, Memorial Day weekend, one of the worst holiday weekends now ever. Driving through the craziness, but that was a good weekend, you know. All in all, you know, like I said, it just had to get it done, got it done, and we're still moving, still getting it done,
you know. It might feel like I'm putting you on blast a little bit, so I'm apologizing ahead of time. But, you know, that's the short version of a long week, you know, because I recall, you know, like in the onset of last week, you know, life was really taking you to the paces, you know. And I think some, but again, you know, that's a funny thing about the brain. It doesn't have the capacity to store pain once the pain has been relieved. And I think that applies emotionally as much as medically, maybe even psychologically, and maybe even spiritually, you know. But, you know, I would imagine that it's hard for you to articulate what you were going through, and it probably even harder if you had it written down to read what you were feeling. You sent me a text message. I'm not going to read it on the air, of course. So you sent it to me, so I have a recording of how you were feeling, you know, a week ago. Well, maybe about 8-9 days ago. And, you know, to hear the favorable report now, it's once again the wonder of the testimony in the fact that the way we are so designed, that as much data as the brain can hold on to, you know, it does not have the capacity to hold on to pain. So it's great for me, and now I'm going to be the dad. It's great for me as your father to hear how you sound now as opposed to how you sounded, you know, 7-10 days ago. So right on, man. Yeah, I'm celebrating the good news, brother.
Yeah, thank you. I get into these woeful moments, you know.
As we all do, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I can't say that. as you and I do.
As me and you, sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, we refer to that as AKA Catholic guilt. So if you ever hear us use that term, that's a quick reference, if you will. So many different ways to interpret that.
We could do a whole show on that. Yeah.
Oh man. I was going to put myself on the spot one time and just, Dad, why I keep carrying this stick up my butt? But that's another story for another time, like.
Yeah, and that's definitely not an image I want to walk around with anyway.
All right. I'm sure you and the millions of people out there feel the same way.
The millions. Yeah.
Millions. So,
all righty.
So, before we, keep going here, I know a couple of the previous shows I've talked a little bit about some tips in dealing with these new changes in gas prices. And I was talking about, taking advantage of cashbacks and other discounts and stuff like that. So here in Chicago, I don't know how it is in Texas, but you haven't really been there. We're already past the $5 a gallon mark.
Oh, you mean as far as the cost of gas?
Really?
I'm not surprised. Yeah. Illinois has one of the highest, whatever that excess tax is, So go ahead.
So I'm not surprised. And I think California is already hitting 6, probably on their way to 7. So it just looks like this is just going to be what's happening. But these are just a couple other tips that I wanted to share, if you don't mind, Dad. Just not about using cars or anything, but just some, even if it's down to like $2, I don't care how much it is. I just think that these are just some quick little points that we should all remember when we're getting gas or when we need to get gas. So if you don't mind that, I'm just really quick. I just wanted to touch on about 4 brief points. Is that okay?
Go ahead. Go ahead, man.
So one tip that I've learned is that when you're getting gas, it's best to get it like early in the morning, basically a time when the temperature is at its lowest point. I know in Texas, there really isn't a lot of low points in temperature because you guys are always hot. But in the mornings when it's cool, it's really a good time to get gas when the ground temperature is still cold. As the temperature rises, that adds to number 2, and that's when you're filling up the tank. When you fill up the tank, you've got those different stages on the handles. There's a low, medium, and high setting. Sometimes we just flick the little thing and we just let it fill up by itself. Some of you have probably heard this already. Of course, if you try to fill it up too fast, what happens is that you add more vapor, you get a vapor return. And with this vapor return, you're paying, like the cost has to deal with more vapor than the actual gas itself. So it's best to just keep it on a lower setting. I don't even put it on that automatic click thing. I just pull it up a little bit and I just let it fill up slowly. Trust me, you get a lot more bang, pardon, if you will, more bang for your buck by not pulling it up to its fastest setting. The third point that I wanted to share, depending on your budget, I try to, when I get to half a tank, I try to go to the gas station. I really don't like to wait until I get to that light comes on. But, I know sometimes, depending on our budget, we push the envelope sometimes and we get those little lights and indicators on our gas tanks. I got 5 more miles. I got 10 more miles. Sometimes it's better to just fill it up when it gets to that halfway point. And the last thing is, most importantly, it's just a little something that I personally I don't do. Whenever I see the tankers at the gas station, I do not use that gas station. As the gas tankers are filling up the reservoir underneath the gas, the station, what happens is when they're putting the gas in those tankers underneath, it's kicking up all the dirt and all the other stuff that's settled at the bottom. So there's a lot of times as you're filling up your tank, your vehicle, you're sometimes getting all the deposits that settle at the bottom. And sometimes you can get that in your tank, which could harm your vehicle. So, you know, unless you're in dire straits and you have to get gas, you know, you're pushing your vehicle or you're in neutral because you ain't got no gas or something like that, I can understand. But if you can help it, if you see the tanker there, do not use that gas station. So those are just some quick points. Like I said, I just wanted to be quick with it. I hope that this helps you all. And we try to, you know, hopefully this will help us, help you as we deal with all these inflation, if you will, or increase in prices of gas, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, I hope that helps. So that was it. Thank you, Dad, for letting me share that. I don't know. I think I might have.
Alrighty.
There he is.
Yeah.
Just saw your message. So where are we at?
Yeah. You know, in listening to you and thinking about where my brain was as far as tonight's show, it's like, oh, yeah, I guess there are other, you know, things going on other than what the news may be bringing. You know, and it's funny how the news can so often with me dictate, you know, what the priority of my thoughts are. So even though I just came from an 8-hour drive, you know, one direction, and dealing with, you know, gas being what it is, you know, I'm thinking in terms of gas while I'm on the road, but then when I get home, I'm thinking about the issues at hand. So, you know, it's that's an interesting, you know, dichotomy, you know, that you presented, you know, in talking about gas tips, you know, which in itself, you know, when you're on the road, you know, well, when I'm on the road as a black man, you know, I tend to, you know, think more in terms of safety. And, you know, but then again, it's true that, you know, when I look out at the gauge, it's like I need to be aware of where I am, you know, so I can consider where I'm going to stop. But again, you know, it's like the prices are what they are. And so, yeah, I would imagine that it would be a good thing, you know, if it's just a usual jaunt, you know, around familiar settings, you know, to be aware of any way at all that can be used to save money on gas. You know, we are a society that's addicted to oil, no question about it. And so the idea of trying to move from point A to point B without a vehicle sometimes can be real challenging with one's thoughts. Like, I think often about, what if I had to walk from here to the store? You know, and then I remember, wow, there was a time when I did exactly that, when I was too young to drive. You know, so it's, you know, like it's something how as we just continue to, you know, expand in growth in life as we age, you know, different priorities take on different meanings and different circumstances require a creative way to approach it. Yeah, so living in inflationatory times, it is important to, you know, cut corners any way possible. You know, unless one lives in the luxury of being able to just throw money up in the air, you know, every tip helps. So right on, man. That's a good reminder, you know, of preparing for life's events. You know, like we saw the gas thing coming months ago, and you know, folks are still complaining about what was real clear, that we would be right where we are. But, you know, it's the realities of life sometimes that often we're ill-prepared to deal with the sudden, what we consider to be the sudden confrontation. So it is in life, man. So I'm reflecting back on, just to shift a little bit, to the streams of violence that has just seem to overwhelm this country since the last we were on the show. And I'm thinking about, you know, a previous show we did that I really didn't go over, you know, the stats of shootings in the U.S. And it's almost like, why do that? You know, I'm looking at it now. I'm staring at my script now. Why do that when we're looking right now face-to-face with the realities of the stats? You know, like we can talk all about, you know, who literally who shot John, you know. But, man, I don't know, Will, man, you got to help me out. It's like, is there a priority when it comes to shooting? I mean, is mass shootings the priority now? So it's like, you know, black folks being plugged by the cops, that's no longer, you know, that's not the end thing. Does that violence no longer apply? Does black-on-black crime no longer apply? Because it seems like white-on-white and white-on-black, you know, gun violence is what applies. But then guns, you know, this country, you know, has more, I mean, you know, this country has more civilians are armed in this country than some countries have an armed service, you know. So, but what are we preparing for? And I guess that's my question, and maybe that's the question I just want to throw out there to you. What do you think we're preparing for in this country? Are we preparing for a civil war? I don't mean a civil war of words, you know. I mean a civil war of violence. What do you know? I know that it's hard to think on those terms because of the different forms of distraction that we have, you know, and we always have the luxury of sport, you know, that sometimes, and commercials that sometimes allows us to just, and movies and entertainment that allows us to just step outside of the arena of the violent nature of this country, you know, of the constant war that seems to be going on, and more so than just the words, you know, where we start looking at, we can see as we look deeper into the themes of violence directed toward a particular people even, you know, and are we so conditioned that we'll read about a mass shooting or more people, and that doesn't mean all of them have to die, but we'll read about or view a mass shooting, and does that take priority over the reality of violence in this country? So that's the question I'm asking you. And I'm asking anyone who might, you know, have an opinion about that. Is this what's getting ready to jump off? And if so, you know, how is it going to be dealt with? What are the entertainers going to do? You know, like what are the, you know, the athletes going to do? What are those who provide, you know, what are, you know, those who provide even comic relief, what are they going to do? What is the night, you know, the night talk shows going to look like? You know, we already know what the cable news shows look like, but you know, is this country mentally prepared for a civil war? What do you think?
No, I mean, I don't think it's mentally prepared. I think that was evident from the last 4 years that we deal with, you know, this dude in office before Biden. And we're still reaping the trauma and the scars of so many different things and still dealing with the, you know, with the issues of this, this and that, you know. So no, I don't think so. I mean, where do you go? You know, you mentioned so many different influences. Now we stagger between the lines of what's real and I guess what's not real, and of course we have to define that as well, realism, if you will. But like from social media to internet to video games, you know. Everything's entertainment, movies and actors and actresses, and where that's real life now. These pretend people, these pretend states, these pretend games, these they make it more real. It begins to seem more real, and I think a lot of people are influenced by those things. And then, of course, mental health. Everybody's talking about mental health and the lack of support, the lack of support for people that need assistance. But I think a lot of times we still know how to also turn a blind eye to, if you will, to people who are in need. I mean, I know you didn't really want to bring up the Buffalo shooting, but just as an example, you know, a lot of people turned away or pretended like they didn't see his postings, pretended like they didn't see his pictures, pretended like they didn't see his calling for help because it was right there. Yet we want to blame.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just, you know, I'm just saying, you know, there's so many different layers to this. They want to pretend like they want to be ready for a civil war, if you will. But I don't think that this country is ready for that. I don't think so.
Well, I don't know if a country can get ready for it, you know, because then that would mean a country would have to be dealing with it, you know. And I'm looking at, I mean, I'm hearing what you say. I'm not sure you're getting my point about this, though. There are things in motion right now. And what concerns me, especially for my people, is that we tend to turn a jaundiced eye to the things that are being talked about as if, you know, well, it doesn't really include me. Well, indirectly, it doesn't. Well, directly, maybe it doesn't seem to. But, like, we're starting to tamper with the Constitution. You know, now, just because we may not feel like we're a part of the Constitution, there's parts of the Constitution that have redefined us as a people. And maybe we've so taken it for granted that we just assume it will always be. But my cautionary tone has to do with the fact of having believed that for the first part of my life, that things are better, only to see the things that have happened over the course of the last, you know, decade or so that have indicated to me that this country is angry, and it's not angry at the rest of the world. It's implosive. It's angry at elements of this part of the world. There's a war already going on politically directed toward black people, you know, directed toward people of color, you know, directed toward those indigenous tribes of this country. You know, and anything that any aspect of culture that doesn't speak to the white male Protestant work ethic, you know, the foundations of what this country was made of. It's like we've been lulled to sleep, or we've allowed ourselves to be lulled to sleep in a very short period of time. And that's the other thing that concerns me, that we're not really time focused historically. You know, we have the luxury of distractions that just don't require that we keep attuned to, you know, the immediacy of what's going on. I mean, the Civil War was not that long ago, but I'm not sure that we as Americans, black, white, I don't care, we as Americans even have much of a sense of a historical time clock. It seems that, you know, this country is more focused on the immediacy of comfort, while there are things going on that has to do with the shifting of power that will dictate policy for those that are coming behind us. Maybe we have been so conditioned to just operate within a mode of survival and just, you know, take what we can take and find the comfort in doing what we're allowed to do and just distract ourselves enough to just enjoy some of the fruits of living in a so-called democratic society. But we're having shifts in the voting, the voting arena, where districts are being redesigned. Was just hearing today about how in areas of Michigan, around the Detroit area, places like Pontiac and I can't think of the other ones off the top of my head, but that the districting is being so redesigned that it's going to put a burden on people, and this is a concentrated population of black people, going to put a focus on making it more and more difficult for them to vote. You know, now, yeah, I know that we're not big voters anyway as a people, you know, and that was the luxury of indifference. But now, because civil rights has become the challenge, and make no mistake about it, you know, civil rights include women's rights, and women's rights include civil rights. So we may want to, you know, wave a stick at the idea of Roe versus Wade being overturned, but that's something that the Supreme Court is doing. That means it is in its highest form changing the structure of the very laws that it put in place. And if we look politically at the people who've been appointed on the Supreme Court, a person like myself can't help but to be concerned about the idea. If you can overturn one aspect of constitutional right, then you can overturn another, meaning all it takes is a certain amount of votes to decide to, you know, take away the rights of freedom, you know, where black people could actually legally be returned to slavery, and we wouldn't even know it, you know, because we don't know what that means in today's society. We think it would be impossible to think of a Shaquille O'Neal or a Charles Barkley or a Kenny the Jet Smith, you know, sitting next to Ernie Johnson, and those three be reduced to the status of slaves constitutionally. You know, we wouldn't think those things possible, but we don't have an idea of what it would mean if it in fact, you know, became the way legally of the land. We would have no power. We'd have no say so about that. You know, and I'm looking at the weapons, you know, that are being so freely sold and so freely distributed, you know, and watching, you know, like these videos I see where, you know, I'm seeing these white dudes with their sons and daughters playing war games in the woods with these high-powered weapons. And, yeah, we look at it and we think, oh, that's a shame. But, you know, black folks don't do that kind of stuff. You know, we're conditioned to respond to policy, not dictate it. So these aspects of a part of this culture that has so designed itself in this form of privilege, once threatened, feel completely right to defend their privilege by any means necessary. We say by any means necessary, it means something totally different to white people than when white people say by any means necessary. So those are the things I'm speaking to in regards to the potential and possible civil war erupting in this country. Not like it, you know, not talking about Glory and Matthew Broderick running around with Denzel and Morgan Freeman as, you know, Union soldiers are fighting for, you know, a really kind of a dichotomy of rights, you know, like black dudes in uniform fighting for their freedom, you know, while, you know, what came out of the White House had more to do with industry, you know. So these are the things that we, you know, that I'm not hearing discussed in the open form of the news. And these are the things that, you know, concern me. So when I ask that question, you know, the preparation, are we heading toward that aspect of civil war, not the 1800s, but what it would look like in the 21st century after so many rights have been established and now being taken away and being rewritten yet again, you know, I'm concerned that we as a people, meaning black folks, have been so conditioned and so accustomed and so spoiled, you know, to the idea of freedom as we enjoy it, not as we, you know, as we experience it, not as it is intended to be designed, but as, you know, as we enjoy it and as we experience it. I'm concerned that, you know, like civil war could sneak up on us and we wouldn't even know it because we would be so comfortable with being entertained and entertaining, you know, like I don't know if black athletes are ready to just step off the stage and say, you know, this has gone far enough. And until this aspect of equality is extended to all, we are no longer going to provide you with this relief that we've been, you know, giving you, that you can cheer for us on the stadium floor, but absolutely give no thought to us as human beings once a weapon is turned against us. You know, we would never shoot you as an athlete performing for us, but I can't guarantee that same thing won't happen if you pull up in my hood in the wrong time at night, and I can't really make out who you are in the shadows, but I find myself afraid for my own well-being, and I know all I have to do is say that I was afraid for my own safety, and I could just mow you down, and I have a high percentage chance of being set free in the courts. Those are the things that concern me, you know, and I really do believe that the privilege aspect of this country has no problem with being able to adjust and adapt to the idea of civil war if it should happen. That's where I am with it, man. And if I sound like the voice of gloom and doom, I apologize. This aspect of violence, especially with guns and being directed. So, I mean, like just today, you know, I'm catching up on the fact that this sister was shot 3 or 4 times on Friday in Kansas City, pregnant, you know, and hearing the story how it's changed now to where she was actually running away from the police, suspected carjacking, and she was running away while the dude, I guess, who was the driver, did run away, and she's pregnant, and now the story is that she was brandishing a weapon, and, you know, as she was running, turned the weapon on the police, pointed at him, and that's when they, you know, shot her. Reading today about this cop, this black police officer in Wauwatosa, you know, Wisconsin, who has a history in a very short time of being on the force, has a history, you know, in 3 killings within the span of 5 years. And then reading about his, you know, reading his autobiography, you know, makes me just wonder. And then, you know, like I can't shake the Herschel Walkers and the Tim Scotts and the you know, Clarence Thomases out of my mind, you know, and knowing that they can sit where they sit and support the idea of a supremacist agenda. So that's where I am with it, you know. And that's where my concerns rest, my man. So, you know, I'm hoping I'm not depressing you.
I'd rather hope that I'm,
you know, raising a degree of alarm.
Yeah, my response was I was responding more of a general overview, if you will, of our country. As Adam stated, I mean, there are parts where people are prepared and probably want it, and I don't know if Adam means black people. He'll have to specify what he means by that. But I can say that I think that they're both. That there are people who, you know, what I mean, like there are people with underground, you know, places thinking, you know, preparing doomsday places, you know, stuff like that. So this country was born on violence, then you know, and the right to carry guns, et cetera, et cetera. So there are people who study, who prepare, who take their children out and train them, and not just white people, black people do it too. You may not see it, but there are black families who train together. There are black communities that are off the grid, quote unquote. You know, I don't know if you remember, a few years ago, there was even that group in Atlanta that was armed and walking up on white supremacy organizations and groups and stuff like that. But there's a word that you mentioned, and that's adaptability, being able to adapt in these situations, because, you know, we don't dictate the policy, we always react to it. And then there's a question of our adaptability. And then, yeah, we're survivors, but you know, where does that get us? You know, when the head is cut off, we usually become limp. And then we don't do anything. The fire dies out. So how do we adapt to these situations? How do we learn to get in there and how do we learn how to dictate these policies? You know, voting wasn't a big thing to us. Now voting is a thing to us because they're changing the policies. And I'm sure they're like, oh, now you want to react to it. You know, now you want to vote now that we're making these changes. So I just think there, like I said, there's so many different layers to it. I just mentally or dealing with the aftermath, I don't think that we are ready for it. I don't think we really understand what that means. But
would you say we, who are you referring to, America as a whole or black
people? America as a whole.
Oh, okay. Well, I totally disagree with you there.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, whether agree or disagree doesn't matter. Your point is your point, and that's all that matters.
I mean, I can't respond to that. You know, it's just my opinion. That's what it is. So
yeah, I think that it's a cold reality, and I think it stirs fear more so than imagination. And I think that we would just rather think it's not possible than accept the possibility of it being possible. You know, I think we would like to think that this country has evolved enough to where it wouldn't even consider such a thing. But my point is, watching the news suggests there's more going on in this country than what we're comfortably willing to accept. I mean, I get it. I know the value of survivor. I know the Christian approach. I understand, you know, the power of prayer as a relief. And I get the threat of social upheaval beyond the scope of control, you know, and I am one who has lived 75 years on this planet and understand how in such a short period of time it is so much easier to believe that such a thing could not happen, yet such a thing is and has happened since the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation. There's never been a time where black folks have enjoyed a peaceful coexistence in the structure of white America. Our peaceful coexistence is more amongst ourselves. And we find an aspect of invisibility to be able to operate financially, economically, socially, you know, in a white world. But this world that we inhabit is becoming more and more violent, and that violence is becoming more and more overt as it's being pointed toward a select group of people. This is not a random process anymore. This is a pattern, a themed approach, an acceptance. You know, we'll hear America speaking in outrage when it turns its violence on its own, but we'll also see in comparison how there's certain aspects of the legal exchange that we, meaning black people, do not enjoy. And we'll talk, we'll whisper, we'll speak about it amongst ourselves, but we're not going to hear it spoken openly by our black leaders. And this is where I really miss, you know, the community leadership. You know, the political leadership still operates within the vein of what is required in order to keep that job. Those community organizers and those community leaders and those who spoke through the bullhorn, we don't have that voice. And it concerns me that because we don't have that voice, we don't think that voice is necessary, and we trust the system. Anyway, shifting away from that, Ray made a great comment about your FICO, man, being over 7, you know, and what he said, must be nice, you know, light work for folk with over 7 FICO. You know, mm-hmm. When you get up over there, yeah, you know, that's kind of the that's the luxury of living in America. You know, you get your credit right, you can do just about anything, you know, within the context of the social cosmic economy of this country. And I think that's an aspect of freedom that we feel we have, like being able to operate within the money market, you know, and being able to move a little bit more freely around the world. Yet, you know, as freely as I move, that's as much more I have to be aware, because it's not, you know, it's still not an even playing field for moving around in this country, black.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking it's kind of there's a almost as a mirrored relationship, if you will, to moving around like that and being black and moving around like that, and having to even maintain a good credit score. You know, I mean, we've talked about finances and dealing with, you know, money in America and stuff like that. Like, you know, they were like, you know, you may ask the question, well, Will, how did you get your credit score up? Just real, I mean, I'm not going to go into all the steps and stuff, but the thing with America is that you got to be in debt to have good credit, but you have to be able to maintain that debt to keep that credit. And it's almost like maintaining the debt of the dysfunctional schizophrenia, you know, or the functional. Yeah, maintaining the functional schizophrenia, like maintaining your debt, you know, whereas you're in this debt, but you're still maintaining this good credit score based on these certain criteria. I don't know. Actually, when I say it now, it may not come out as clear as I meant it to come out, but I'm just relating it to what you're saying as far as just moving around in America and being a black person and moving around like that. So I apologize if it didn't come out clear for some of you all listening.
See, Adam got his hand up in the studio. On, you know, you want to in the queue. You want to bring him in?
Yeah. Hey, good evening, Adam. How you doing tonight?
Good evening, gentlemen. How you guys doing?
Doing well.
The only thing that I would say is if January 6th, when they stormed the Capitol, if that's not proof that people are absolutely ready and willing to start a civil war because they need to take their country back, I don't know what is.
Amen.
And I would think that they should be charged as terrorists. But you have some people saying, no, they're not terrorists, they're patriots. They're fighting for their rights.
Well, that's the conflict of America. That's what, you know, like that's the argument of privilege. You know, they are debating amongst themselves what to call this thing that the Constitution makes clear what it was. But they're debating amongst themselves, you know, and what we're left with is the residue of the debate. We are not the arbiters of the debate, you know, so that's my point. You know, in a nutshell, right there, as far as I'm concerned, the perfect example, you know, that they are arguing amongst themselves for whatever will be a viable outcome that we will be left to deal with in whatever direction it flows. That's as good of an example as I can give. But, you know, go ahead on, man. I'm sorry. Let me cut you off.
And when's there going to be enough for us to care and feel free to fight for what we believe in? And I think that has a lot to do with, I think, Bill, you had made the point between accepting and acknowledging. It's been accepted. It may be accepted in those quiet little corners that you were talking about, but those quiet little corners that are accepting it, they need to go out and yell and scream and roar so it's acknowledged.
Yeah, well,
we all know the country's jacked up.
Well,
but there's not enough
even that's
that...
an argument. Yeah, even that's a debate. Yeah, oh, yeah. What part of jacked up are we referring to? You know,
yeah.
And you know, like it's different. Well, different strokes for different folks, as the song used to go, you know. So it's, to me, it all comes down to wherever our flavor button is, wherever our comfort zone is, wherever the greater threat lies, you know. For some who have nothing, anything, you know, is a threat. For those who have something, what we have and losing it is the threat. The idea of whatever lap of luxury we may enjoy, that constitutionally it can be taken from us, and all we can do is revolt, but we cannot act within the court of law, because the court of law has already dictated and mandated, no, you no longer have that freedom anymore. You know, that's what I'm watching this country do from a place of privilege, as it's dealing with that January 6th thing. And how in the hell can somebody like Trump still be given the stage he's given to even, you know, have any kind of influence on anything? Those, you know, like, yeah, people can scoff and laugh at, oh, you know, what an idiot and all that. But the man is still in the news. And I'm not bringing him into it. Y'all not bringing him into it. The news that we listen to is bringing him into it. And we have no other news outlet. So what we tend to do is just not listen to the news. But this is still going on, whether we listen to it or not, whether we debate it or not. I would rather that, even if we feel powerless to dictate change, that at least among ourselves we're having an intelligent debate about what is happening. You know, to me, without that debate, we're totally going to be ignorant to what.
It's almost like when you're a little kid and you're laying in bed and you're scared. So you pull the covers over your head, and if they can't see me or I can't see it, then there's nothing there. And that's almost what we're doing.
Well, that's not almost what we're doing. We've had a lifetime of doing it that way. We've been an invisibilized people since the end of the Civil War. You know, what was fought for has nothing to do with where we are today. We're still fighting the fight. I don't know. And just because we have a bank account, you know, doesn't eliminate the fact that this Civil War, you know, although there are certain comforts that we now enjoy, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as we live within the confines of what that suggests, you know, so we have a little bit of something where at one time we had nothing. Yeah, and that little bit of something we want to cling to, but it's being gnawed at, it's being pulled at, it's gradually being shifted. So what we have enjoyed is being redefined, and that pulling our head, pulling that cover over our heads, won't make it go away. You know, and I'm hoping that at least we're realizing the true depth of what the potential of the shifting attitude of this country is, and how, you know, we as Black people can be most effective. Remember, we're still a people in this country that, first of all, homegrown, only exists here. Secondly, has never been more than the percentage of the population that the government allows. We don't even know what percent of this country we really take up. All we know is we've been told 12%, you know, and we accept that. We don't even count among ourselves to disprove it. You know, we accept that. So that in itself suggests to me, oh, yeah, we've been thoroughly and very adeptly and effectively been invisibilized. You know, that, you know, we've had the wool pulled over our eyes and we've allowed ourselves to think, you know, out of sight, out of mind. So, but hey, what do I know?
But it's going to end up being like little things, like the Kyle Rittenhouse thing. Well, I'm going to protect somebody else's property from those people. You get enough of those, you get enough of that, then that's a civil war right there.
That's the thing. Look, you know, again, you know, like to me, yeah, okay. But to me, that can't compare to lynchings. You know, and it's like somehow we seem to think, you know, lynchings isn't a part of the DNA of this country. You know, I mean, that's the degree of hatred toward a people that exist. That was even up until last year, Congress was still arguing, you know, whether lynchings should be considered illegal. Up to last year, still being argued. So that means there's still an element that doesn't think it should be. Yeah. I don't know, y'all. But what do I know?
So we keep fighting, or try to keep fighting, or keep, you know, stop pulling the covers over our heads. And have conversations like you guys are having.
Well, maybe not, though. Maybe it's annoying, you know. Maybe, you know,
somebody's got to have them.
Yeah, but maybe that's for somebody else. Maybe this isn't supposed to be the format for that. You know, maybe we can talk about the issues of human interest today, here and now, and maybe that's where the focus should be. You know, I don't know. I don't know how to not be 75. I don't know how to not, within the context of my own historical perspective of this country, how to just shorten that and make it convenient. You know, I don't know how to do that. All I know is that how it affects me when I stay mute about it, you know, but maybe it's not fair to be using this format to be talking about it. You know, maybe it's something that should be done in another way. Maybe this is too depressing to consider. I don't know.
I don't think it's depressing. I think it's that I don't think that either we don't know or we don't care. But I think it's more the fact that we are still not understanding, or we still don't know the depth of these situations that you're talking about, and what can happen. I think in general, I'm generally speaking, we're still caught in this malaise of all these different distractions, if you will. A lot of people like to use the term distractions of all these different things that happen. So we've kind of lost the focus, if you will, on one particular point of topic, and we have all these different points and we don't know which way to go strategically, you know. It's just my own opinion. I just feel like we're not strategically in place to make moves or to plan accordingly, you know. And that means like just keeping your mouth shut. You know, just if you're working on a plan, you keep that plan. You're working with a group, you know, you don't advertise it on Facebook. You don't talk about these things, you know, because they don't until the policy is already voted on and they're moving on to the next thing, you know. But it just seems like there are things that we still don't know. So, I mean, the question is, so how do we – go ahead.
There are things that we have right in front of us that we can educate ourselves about, though, you know, and that's not the conversation that's brought forward. You know, like just because I don't live history doesn't mean history doesn't exist. Just because I wasn't born at a time of servitude doesn't mean slavery didn't exist. Just because I wasn't around in the early 1900s doesn't mean lynchings didn't exist, where it was a party, you know, where people brought their families out to celebrate. Not just the hanging of a black person, but burning the carcass. It was cheer, you know. Tulsa, all the things that we, you know, hear about now are not the things that are so embedded in us consciously that we are afraid, you know. Rather than be afraid, we rather just be ignorant to history. You know, we don't think in terms of how are the Black Panthers eliminated. You know, how did that happen when the Ku Klux Klan has continued to operate and all these white supremacist groups have been allowed to continue to move freely? How were black leaders just mowed down one after another while you have these white supremacists who just have a platform they can stand on and spew their hatred freely. We elected a guy who's still doing it. You know, how, you know, but it's not a part, you know, it's not a part of our everyday conversation as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's no excuse for that. You know, I just don't know what the, what, where the forum, where the forum, where the platform is from where it could be spoken to, at least in part, even in just a segment, you know, of code calculation and reminder of the violent nature of this country as it has taken over the very consciousness of its inhabitants. I don't, you know, I have a fear inside of me, and this is the closest I've ever gotten to speaking on it regularly. But make no mistake about it, it's a fear I've carried around for as long as I can remember. And at some point of any given day, I fear a violence that I know can be turned on me in a heartbeat. You know, and it's rare, whether even if I step outside the door or not, you know, and it's not singular. It's not whether it happens to me directly. The me I speak of is all those who I hold near and dear. There's rarely a day that passes that I'm not concerned about the well-being and safety of my people, you know, especially, you know, my male people. You know, yeah, amen. That's, you know, anyway, we're well over time. You know, obviously this was not the direction it was probably intended to go. And, you know, if I made you guys uncomfortable with it, embarrassed you in any way, I apologize. You know, I do.
I don't know.
But I don't make apologies for my fears. Yeah, amen.
All right. All right, well, I don't think apology is necessary. I'm not embarrassed or anything like that. But I think in these type of discussions, though, I think, you know, still needs to be a plan, you know, identify the problem, and we need to come up with solutions too. But, you know, what's our agenda? What's our priorities? You know, you've talked a lot, Dad, about defining certain things, you know, and I think that's a basic beginning step, you know, in these demands that we have and the understanding what those demands are. We want this. Well, what is that? How do you define it? And I think we've just kind of lost some of those basic initial steps to even defining what we want. But, all right, so I guess that's it for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Again, we are live every Monday and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/The Greenhouse Effect. Here on The Greenhouse Effect Radio Show, we try to provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experiences, especially when we share interpretations and feelings. I'm Will. That's Bill over there.
Hey, Adam, thanks for dialing in, man. And Ray, thanks for joining the chat line, man. Amen.
Absolutely. Love you guys.
All right. Love you, too.
Love you back, man.
Did you want to hit this last comment here before we sign off? Did you want to read that real quick?
What's that? Did I miss something?
Ray just chimed in right before we headed out. Change seldom shows up in perfect order.
I don't see it. I don't have it. Oh. I don't have it. Pop, go ahead.
Change
it didn't show up. Yeah.
Suddenly shows up in perfect order and really suddenly shows up in any form of order. What does change look like? That's the question. Can it be sparked from a Blog Talk Radio platform? Absolutely. No, never. It's too small. Yeah, right.
Well, I'm tripping, man.
Right.
I'm not even seeing it. Wow. Thank you, man, for pointing that out. Yeah,
you know,
go ahead.
When change proceeds, what are the conversations? Exactly. Do leaders look upon one another and say, yes, this change is going exactly as we planned, according to the blueprint. That's a good, good question. Good point.
Yeah, right I must have been hijacked, man. I'm not seeing. I've been hacked. I did not see Ray's comment. Right on, man. Thank you. Thank you for, man, how come I didn't get it? Thank you, man, for reading that. Right on. Yeah.
And you know, I'll say this, man, and I love to have, you know, this conversation. You kind of caught me by surprise on it tonight, but that's cool. I like a challenge, of course, but I still say that we need to understand what it means to be able to police, or yeah, people don't like that term, to protect our own communities. You know,
to police our own communities, right?
But people don't like that term sometimes.
Yeah,
you know?
Please everybody, nobody's pleased. Please yourself, and at least you're pleased. Go ahead.
And in the feedback I get, you start a block club and this and that. Well, you know what? My neighborhood has a block club, and the other block has a block club. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm standing out on 63rd and King Drive trying to bring peace to the most dangerous neighborhood in Chicago, you know, but I don't need to get into that, you know, but yet we always want to deflect if we don't even understand what it means to that basic understanding of protecting our own community, then to answer your question, no, Dad, we're not ready. I don't think we're ready. You know, we want to keep getting on social media.
I didn't say ready. I said prepared.
Well,
you know,
we're not prepared.
But anyway, we can have, we can have that. You know, I'm not going to, you know, get into crossing T's and dotting I's about the point I was trying to make. But I'm hearing what you're saying, and maybe that's, you know, something to consider for your part in a future show, you know, to talk mm-hmm. about what your contributions to the community has been. You know, again, you know, a format like this, I always assumed it's designed to allow those who bring it to decide pretty much how it's going to be used. And, you know, like talking about, you know, on any given topic, it should leave room for you to talk about your own personal accomplishments or personal issues, you know, but, you know, that's something to be explored, I guess, in whether or not that's what this is all about.
Yeah. All right. So again, I'm Will. That's Bill over there. Again, thanks Ray and Adam. Sue, I see you out there. Thanks for listening. Thanks to everybody else that took the time to listen. Spend an hour with Dad and I. Well, an hour and a half almost. Again, we're live every Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Yeah.
Please be safe. Be blessed, and most importantly, be yourself. Until Monday night, love you, Dad.
Love you, Will.
Sorry about that. All right. Take care, everybody.
Amen.
If you stay, you'll be happy as I lie here on the rooftop in the rain.